You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Welcome in, everybody. It is Wednesday, October 15th. I am your fill-in host, Christina Long, filling in for Matt Jones, who will be back on the show on Friday. Today on the show, we're going to be joined by Olin Buchanan of TexAgs, who will talk a little bit about the Aggies ahead of Arkansas football's game against Texas A&M this weekend. And later, Ethan Westerman will join us to talk a little bit about what he heard at SEC Basketball Media Days from both the men's team and the women's team. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back, everybody. We are pleased to be joined now by Olin Buchanan of TexAgs, who's joining us from Birmingham at SEC Basketball Media Days. We're going to talk a little football, but Olin, thanks for making some time while you're in between sessions over there in Birmingham.
It's my pleasure. I love Northwest Arkansas. So, you know, I lived there for about 6 months once when I was in seventh grade.
Yeah.
I was a cowboy.
And I was too. Matt told me this morning when he was getting me prepped to talk to you, he said you need to talk about both being proud Woodland alums.
I was there for about, you know, again, about 6 months.
But that counts.
I still remember.
Yeah, yeah. We love Woodland. Well, before we get into football, I'll ask you one quick basketball question. Just Okay. Overall, what are you expecting out of Bucky McMillan and his team in this first year for him?
I don't know what to expect, to be honest. I have to admit that I haven't watched a lot of Samford basketball.
Wow, shocking.
Yeah, I watched a lot of Samford and Son, but not a lot of Samford basketball. And I understand that the his style of play is fun. They're going to be shooting the ball three-pointers all the time, which was what they did under the previous coach. They just expect to make some of them this time. And he did a pretty good job, it appears, in the transfer portal. By the time he became the A&M head coach, most of the top guys in the transfer portal had already signed elsewhere, but he was able to, I think, put together a pretty good roster. You know, he had no players when he took over, kind of like Cal.
Yeah, exactly, so like that.
Very much like Cal. Now, hopefully, for the Aggies, it'll work out like it did for Cal. And but we're not taking that for granted, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard you ask Calipari about, hey, what's it like starting over when you don't have a team? And Calipari was saying, hey, we started 0-5 in SEC play, so it's not like we just blasted off right from the start. So, you know, kind of setting the expectation there for Texas A&M a little bit, maybe.
Right. Look, all's well that ends well. It turned out really well for Arkansas. Seems like I remember hearing people say, I don't know if Cal's over the hill or whatever. And then the next thing you know, didn't they blow it like a 10-point lead or something?
Yeah,
Arkansas?
It was the lead eight. It was that late lead. Yeah. It was a crazy game. And yeah, just it didn't end how they wanted, but at the same time, it was better than expected about midway through the season. So I think people look back on it pretty positively.
Amazing season for a first year coach. And quite frankly, having Calipari as your coach, I wouldn't have expected much else.
Right. Well, speaking of coaches, I wanted to ask you, could you have imagined when Bobby Petrino was the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M briefly there, that a couple years later you'd be watching him coach Arkansas against Texas A&M again?
I'm going to say this. Nothing in college sports surprises me.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, as soon as – well, yeah, I'm not surprised. And in fact, it's kind of obvious to me. Everybody knows how good Arkansas was under Coach Petrino. He paid his penance, and when he was hired to be the offense coordinator, they're like, great coach, people love him there. He did amazing things. If it doesn't work out well for Sam, everybody knows, even though Sam's a great guy, that his situation was kind of precarious. And if it doesn't go well, it seems like, yeah, I think you could all see it coming if they got off to a bad start. Mm-hmm. So no, I'm really not surprised.
Yeah.
What I'm more surprised is that, they go out with Coach Petrino completely in charge and dang near beat Tennessee, have that rally. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, if they would have let Bobby run the offense down here, Jimbo might still be the coach. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but here we are.
Well, and I was going to ask you that, too, is how do Texas A&M people look back on Petrino's season there? Because I know there was all the controversy about, you know, is this really Petrino's offense? And basically it came out, you know, it really wasn't. It was still Jimbo kind of calling the shots there. So how do people kind of look back on that season?
With frustration, of course. I think, especially if Arkansas wins, the narrative down here is going to be, look what it could have been. But you know, Bobby's obviously a really good offensive coach, great play caller. Really would have been interesting, had he been given the opportunity to do what his job title suggested he should have been doing. But you know what? We really didn't get to know Bobby. I think we got to meet with him once, but I remember asking him, I said, Coach, you know, I have to be honest, I'm a little surprised. You seem like a really good guy. And, it's not really fitting the reputation. He kind of laughed. And he said, well, you know, I'm not the head coach anymore, and I've kind of mellowed out and all that. But we really never got a chance to know him. So I wish him the best, except, of course, for this week.
Yeah, it's interesting how different programs now, you don't get to see the coordinators that often. You just don't. You know, every program handles it a little bit differently. But, you know, we would talk to him twice a year as offensive coordinator. And now we're talking to him, you know, a couple times a week. And it's very striking kind of the difference in, you know, how a head coach, he has a very different style with media than Pittman did.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it was the Saban effect.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm the only guy that's going to talk
yep.
about the team. Everything's going to go through me. And then when he's so successful, people think, hey, yeah, that's the way I'm going to do it that way too. So yeah. At least that's my theory.
Yeah. So the big news this week for A&M is Le'Veon Moss's injury. Who is expected to take over the carries there with him out? And how much might that actually change Texas A&M's offense? I don't, you know, is there a running back room? Is there a decent amount of depth, or is this a pretty huge blow?
They're much better equipped to handle this loss than they were last year. Mm. Reuben Owens is going to step in, and Reuben Owens had 142 yards, a team high for the season. I think it was, you know, they all run together. I think that was against Mississippi State. And he's very capable. But last year, Reuben was hurt too. Reuben tore his ACL in August and didn't get back until the Texas game. So they didn't have him. This year they have him. They have Amari Daniels. And they have this freshman out of Memphis I really like a lot, Jamarian Morrow. In fact, he kind of runs. He's not as big as Le'Veon, but he kind of runs with the same attitude. But there's no denying the fact that, you know, that's a significant loss. And last year when they lost him, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, that November losing streak they went on was right after Le'Veon got hurt. He got hurt at the end of a 20-yard run. And then you didn't have your best player. Mm-hmm. And not only is he your best player, but in short yardage, he was definitely your best option. You know, he had three touchdowns from the one against Notre Dame. And that may not sound like, no, big deal. He's got three touchdowns from the one-yard line. But if you've been following A&M, you know that the Aggies have issues in short yardage, or they did. So it'll be interesting to see if that rears its ugly head again, but I do think they're much better equipped. The offense won't change. I just don't know that you'll – I mean, Reuben has a lot of ability. He was a five-star guy when he came here, but I don't know that he runs with the same passions, just pissed-offness
mm-hmm.
that Le'Veon Moss runs with. I was trying to come up with a better word than that, but my East Texas vocabulary just had to go back to what it is.
Defensively, it seems like Texas A&M has improved a lot since they gave up 40 points to Notre Dame. And I looked it up. I guess they've averaged 12 points in their SEC games, the last three of them. What changed for them after that 41-40 win over Notre Dame defensively?
Well, now at least 10 of those points weren't on the defense. There was a blocked punt. And then one of the field goals came after an interception in field goal range. Mm. And they did a good job to hold them to a field goal. But I think it's just it's really just been a product of guys that getting more and more accustomed to playing together, know what to expect from each other, getting more comfortable in the whole system. Because you know you have a Tyler Onyedem from Iowa State, Deion Hayes from Colorado. You know you have guys that come in and There's a process, I think, of playing together and just getting comfortable. Plus, let's face it, Notre Dame, you know, that's an explosive offense, and they've got as good a running back duo as anybody in the country. And I think CJ Carr is going to turn out to be a really good quarterback for them. So, and obviously, that's a big part of it. Notre Dame is just good.
Yeah, Arkansas definitely saw that in its game. It was, you know, knew it was going to be kind of the offense was going to do, especially against Arkansas's defense, what it was able to do. And so it's interesting that these guys kind of share a common opponent there, and especially one as good as Notre Dame.
I put the over in that game.
Really?
But I took it because I was thinking, well, both teams are going to score. And mm-hmm. the only thing I was surprised that that Arkansas didn't score more because there's a lot of offensive weaponry on that for the Razorbacks on that side of the ball. And I know the Aggies are well aware of that. And I don't want to say, you know, concerned, but definitely respectful of it.
Yeah, definitely. The offense has been the strength. And that was what was so strange about that game was watching it. You know, everybody expected it would be just a shootout. And then it just turned out a little bit different. The offense just wasn't what we thought it was going to be. But for Texas A&M, go ahead.
Yeah, for that game.
Yeah, for that game. Yes,
pretty
exactly.
Good offensively.
Exactly.
Sense,
no,
right?
Exactly. And that was why it was so strange. But yeah, since they've been fine, and I think I'll be very interested what they can do against this Texas A&M defense that has done so well. And I wanted to ask you about, you know, Cassius Howell, who seems to be one of the stars of this defense. You know, leads the SEC with 8 sacks. Just what has he done so well, and has that been a surprise at all, or was he kind of expected to take on this big role?
Well, he was expected to. He 2 years ago, he led the MAC in sacks at Bowling Green. And we heard all kinds of things about him. And, you know, he came here, but he was behind Shamar Stewart, which on the surface, said, well, that makes sense. And then Nick Scorton, too, were the two ends.
Right.
And said, well, that makes sense. One of them was a first-round pick and one was a second-round pick. But he still had 4 sacks, which was the second highest, I think, on the team. And then I remember talking to Colin Klein in the offseason, the offensive coordinator, and he said, let me tell you something, Cassius Howell is going to be a problem. And I said, well, yeah, he was a good player. He said, no, he's going to be a problem. I'm like, yeah, okay, right, coach, sure. And he got off to kind of a slow start, and then he gets 3 sacks on 3 plays against Utah State. You say, oh, yeah, that's nice, but it's Utah State. And then I'll be dang if he doesn't do it again against, they run together. It was either Mississippi State or Auburn. He did it again. And then he only had 1 sack against Florida, but he was in the backfield the whole game. He forced an interception because he hit the ball while it was in the quarterback's hand while he was releasing it, and it fluttered out and was intercepted. He's just been he's really fast for, you know, that position, and has the moves down. Not the biggest guy in the world, not like Shamar Stewart was, but, you know, obviously big enough and a good athlete. And just, I think he's worked hard at developing the moves to go with just his natural speed.
He's one of the key guys that returned from last year, but it seems like A&M lost a lot of guys to the NFL, just had a lot of defensive guys go pro, but have really been able to reload talent-wise across the defense. Was that a surprise at all? And who else is kind of notable in that group as far as somebody that maybe wasn't there last year?
I think you could say it's moderately surprising. Here's the deal. Usually you look at a team and like say LSU or Texas, right? They had 4 offensive linemen that they lost to the NFL and a couple of first round draft choices. And, you know, 1 from Texas, 1 for, but you know, a bunch of guys that got drafted, and you're thinking, well, how can they be as good in the line because those guys played so well? Well, with A&M, yeah, you had a first guy taken in the first round off the defensive line, first round pick, a second round pick, and a third round pick. But if you look really close, they really didn't produce that much. Those 3 guys combined for 9.5 sacks last year. And I know there's more to it than sacks. And Nick Scorton had the best game for an A&M defender against Arkansas last year. If he played like that against everybody, he might have been the first player taken. But he had 2 really good games, Arkansas and Missouri, and sometimes he just didn't produce. So I guess what I'm getting at is you knew that you were replacing a lot of talent, but it wasn't talent that necessarily lived up to what was expected. So coming in this year, you thought, okay, they're probably not going to be as good, but is the step down going to be significant? Well, it turns out it's been a major step up. Yes, Cassius Howell's playing well. They brought in Tyler Onyedem from Iowa State, and he's been really good against the run and gives you a little bit of an inside pass rush. And they bring in Deion Hayes from Colorado, and he's been an excellent complement on the other side to Howell. And then a couple of guys that were here are playing really well. Albert Regis, I thought, was their most consistent defensive lineman last year. He's a tackle. Well, he's playing the best football of his career right now. And then there's a DJ Hicks, who we thought would be starting in front of Onyedem, and he's not, but he's still playing a lot, and he's having the best year of his career. So maybe this is maybe it's coincidence. Maybe it's being in Elko with maybe Elko taking over the defense is making and expecting more from whatever. There could be several factors, but the bottom line is this year's defensive line has been more productive than that last year's line that had all those draft picks.
On the offensive side, we asked Bobby Petrino this week about Marcel Reed a little bit, Texas A&M's quarterback, and Bobby didn't take any credit for Marcel Reed's development. You know, he redshirted that year. Petrino was there, and he was saying, you know, when you're redshirting, you just don't get that many reps in practice. And so he was saying he always liked Marcel, got a great personality, but I didn't make him, basically. But what has Reed done in these last couple of years, and what kind of has him at the level that he's playing at right now?
I think, first of all, he's a good athlete. He's a real conscientious kid, so he works hard at it, you know, to be good. He has a better arm than you would think. I mean, he's about 6 feet, about 185 pounds, soaking wet. They tried to put weight on him all offseason, and I wish I had his metabolism. He's a good athlete that just works hard at it. Can he get better? Yeah, he can get a lot better. And they're not letting him run as much this year, I guess because they're trying to keep him healthy. You know, A&M hadn't had a quarterback start and finish the year since 2020.
Wow, I didn't realize that. That's crazy.
Yeah. So they're trying to be careful with him and don't want him running as much, which may not be a good thing because he's a very talented runner. But he's almost like playing roulette. Man, it's high. I don't want to say high risk, but there's definitely a high reward. Mm-hmm. A perfect example of what I'm talking about is when they played Notre Dame. He threw for 360 yards, but he completed fewer than half of his passes. So when he was hitting them, he was hitting them big.
Yeah.
But I do think he gets better each week. His completion percentage is steadily getting better, and I think right now, he's playing really good football. He'll be playing great football when he learns to take the check down that's there and not force it. They had a 7-point lead in the fourth quarter, first play of the fourth quarter last week against Florida. And you got the feeling that another score, the way their defense is playing, would have put it away. And they were at like the 20 of Florida. And, you know, they call a pass and he has Terry Bussey crossing wide open at the 10, right? But he tries to get the touchdown in the back of the end zone. It gets intercepted. He threw into double coverage. So that's the next thing in the progression you want him to look to get away from, is not forcing something that's not there. Hey, take the check down, take your 5 or 6 yard gain and see if you can't get the first down on a couple of plays and see what happens from there.
You mentioned offensive coordinator Colin Klein earlier, and I was talking to Matt this morning, and he was saying he feels like Klein's offense looks a lot more open at Texas A&M than it did maybe when he was at Kansas State. Is that something that you feel watching them now, and is that a product of the receiver talent that A&M's been able to bring in that maybe Klein hasn't had in other places?
Well, I can't say I know a lot about the receiver talent that he had at Kansas State. I know they had the little running back that was with mm-hmm. the Cowboys. That was so good, and they had a good tight end that was very productive. But I'm pretty sure he didn't have the receivers he has now. And I know he didn't have them last year at A&M because A&M receivers, quite frankly, couldn't get separation. Mm. Not consistently anyway. But Mario Craver, really fast guy. KC Concepcion, really fast guy. Terry Bussey is a guy that's developing. and he's a fast guy. So they have so much more speed at receiver than they had last year. And that's, I think that's the biggest difference. And yeah, I think Colin would say, hey, you know, I got some tools to work with that I didn't have.
Yeah.
And so that combination of that extra speed and Marcel getting a little, getting improving has made a, you know, huge difference, without a doubt, a huge difference in what, in the offense, what Klein's able to do.
I covered Clemson for a season, and I watched Casey Concepcion play Clemson at NC State, and I remember him. I don't remember what stats he had in that game, but he had a huge game against Clemson, and I remember.
I think I watched that game when he came here, and I'm like, okay, I'm not, no offense, but I'm not really that impressed with the ACC, right?
No.
So I said, but Clemson, okay, Clemson, that's the real deal. Let me see what he did against Clemson. And I remember he was a freshman. Mm-hmm. He was the ACC freshman of the year. And I think I remember him having a long run, like on a jet sweep and maybe a punt return in that game too. So, yeah, you saw, wow, this guy's explosive, and he can be explosive against good teams, not just the dregs of the ACC.
Yeah, it's interesting watching some of these transfers from places like the ACC, and just the different, the ACC, the level of competition is just varies so widely from week to week. It's very interesting, but it's been cool to see him have so much success at A&M after getting to see him a little bit before, maybe before people kind of knew who he was, even though he did, like you said, go on to be ACC Freshman of the Year. How do Texas A&M people look at this game now being on campuses? Because I know Arkansas people have been pretty relieved that this is, you know, the Arlington thing was cool for a while, and then it kind of became a little bit of a hindrance, just overall having a neutral site game. Just do
love
A&M
it,
people? Yeah, that's what I figured. I didn't think
we're,
there would be a huge
supposed to be on campus. Yeah. And but besides that, you know, you know, I know the game's in Texas, but we're going into an Arkansas guy's house. Right. So the Aggies are always kind of looking over the shoulder. Is Jerry going to pull something? but yeah, I think that, look, would it be nice to only have to drive 2.5 hours to the game? Yeah, sure. But I think the vast majority of the A&M population just feels like college football is supposed to be on campus, and it's good. And you know, Fayetteville's a pretty place, nice place to visit. You might not get treated well once the game starts, but it's a nice place. And, yeah, I think like on our message boards, I would say more than 90% of the reaction has been that they're glad that it's going to campus. They'll be even more glad when the game's played at Kyle Field. And I don't even know if they play next year if the Razorbacks and the Aggies play next year, but whenever is the next time they play, they'll be more glad it's in Kyle Field, and they won't like it quite as much when you go to Fayetteville because, hey, A&M's had to scrape by sometimes in Dallas or in Arlington. Going up to Fayetteville is just going to make it that much harder.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the way that Texas A&M's schedule has shaken out, just because, you know, speaking of just home and away, five of their six games have been at home so far, and, you know, all three of their SEC games so far.
On the road.
Yeah. And so do you think playing at home so much has had anything to do with the success they've been able to have this season? Do you think it matters that much?
Well, it helps. You know, it's a great home field advantage, but, you know, I think Cassius Howell and Tyler Onyedem and Le'Veon Moss, I think those guys, Torian York, I think those guys would be productive no matter where they are. But I think A&M would have been favored against Auburn in Auburn. I think they would have been favored against Florida in Florida. But certainly it would have been more difficult. I mean, they lost at Auburn last year. They did win at Florida. But yeah. So that's something A&M's got to prove now. They did, you know, when they beat Notre Dame, that was the first time they had beaten a ranked opponent on the road since like 2014.
Wow.
They beat number 3 Auburn. Miles Garrett blocked a field goal on the last play of the half that was returned for a touchdown, and was just enough to Auburn came back and it came up just short. And so, in fact, when they won at Florida last year, it was the first time they had won a SEC road game in 9 games. Or any road game. It was a 10-game losing streak. So A&M had some issues on the road. So, yeah, I mean, it's a fair question, without a doubt. But I do think this team is a little bit better equipped to handle the road than it has been in the past. And winning at Notre Dame, I think, proved that, especially in the manner in which they did it.
I've got one last one for you. Just, we've been talking a lot on the show about how we're halfway through the season, and do we know who's really good in the SEC? Do we feel like we have a clear idea of the SEC hierarchy? We feel like no, and we need some more time. But from a Texas A&M perspective, where do you feel like A&M stacks up in the SEC hierarchy? You know, they're one of three undefeated teams right now in the SEC, but just where do you feel like they can land? You know, where can they go the rest of the year?
See, that's a loaded question, right? Because that homer, you know, if I call him up, that guy from Texas, heck yeah, he's just I think Texas A&M is as good as anybody in the conference and probably better than most. I like to be – I know no one will believe this, but I like to approach things like this objectively. And if I was ranking the SEC, I'd put A&M number one. Now, Greg McElroy, who went to Alabama – and if he had not gone to Alabama, he was going to go to Texas. And this week, I heard him say that he would put A&M number one as well. And I guess the voters do too, since they're ranked number four in the country. I think their resume right now is the best. I think that win over Notre Dame keeps looking better and better each week that Notre Dame wins. And quite frankly, you know, we've seen Georgia escape Tennessee. They beat Tennessee by a missed field goal, and then Tennessee escapes Mississippi State, and A&M dominates Mississippi State. And I know transitive things, it doesn't really work, but what else do you got to go on? Alabama, you know, had the loss early. They could have lost to Vanderbilt if Vanderbilt doesn't turn the ball over twice in the red zone. So I don't think there's a great team right now in the SEC. I don't. You know, in the past, you say, okay, Alabama's better than everybody. Georgia's better than everybody. Maybe you're looking at somebody else really coming on. I don't think there's a great team, but I think if you had to, you know, if you're halfway through the race and you had a photo finish at the halfway point, I do think you would see A&M ahead by a nose. And if it's my nose, it'd be quite a significant lead.
Well, thank you so much, Olin, for giving us some Texas A&M insight. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in Birmingham. And will we see you in Fayetteville this weekend?
Heck yeah, I'm making the drive up Friday.
Awesome.
So I'll be in Fort Smith, spend the night on Friday, but I'll be in Fayetteville on Saturday.
Great. Well, I'll look forward to meeting you there. And we might have a rain game, which might be a problem, but we'll figure that out when we get there.
Okay, I'll bring a poncho.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Olin.
Thank you.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Welcome back. We are joined now by Ethan Westerman, who's on his way back from SEC Media Days in Birmingham, where they got to hear from John Calipari and Kelsey Music about Arkansas men's and women's basketball. But before we get to our discussion with Ethan of what he learned over there in Birmingham, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, and they are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, and if you're looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can look no further than Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan, thanks for joining us on your pit stop at the Starbucks there. We appreciate you taking a little bit of time to share some of what you heard in Birmingham. I wanted to start with the Hot Springs event because we haven't gotten to talk to you or Anthony Christensen, our men's basketball reporter, about what you guys saw when you went over there to the men's basketball scrimmage exhibition type event. I guess it was an inter-squad scrimmage over there in Hot Springs. Calipari said at SEC Media Days that it was – he said, I'm not going to call it a debacle, but whatever the next word is. What did you see that would have made you think that it was something of a debacle?
I think that I personally kind of took that as Calipari really likes his team and he wants to be like very hard on them right now, if that makes sense. That's kind of how I interpreted it, because there was some, like, during the scrimmage, like some very sloppy play early, I thought, with turnovers. Some guys just like shot. It's not that you're missing a free throw, it's that you're missing it badly. It just was like not things that you can do to win big games. But like, then again, the talent and stuff still shone throughout the whole scrimmage. I thought a lot of guys made plays. You got to see how the freshmen can flash. You got to see your transfers make some plays. Carter Knox looked great. Like, the team, you could still tell, like, it's a good team and it's very talented. I think that he's in a phase right now where it's like he's going to lean on the side of, like, not giving them flowers. It's more like, how can I send a message that, like, because to win a championship or to make it however far they want, like, you have to always be hard on yourself. You have to always be asking, like, what can we do better? And he acknowledged after the tip-off tour, he was like, y'all, this is October. Like, I don't expect, like, things to be flawless with execution. I don't expect, you know, us to be the finished product that will be, you know, come March Madness. But I do think that he is trying to send a message, at least, as far as, like, hey, we've got to lock in right now this year. Because if you think back to last year, and number one, they had a schedule last year that kind of allowed them to, in a way, sleepwalk through a lot of non-conference. I mean, they had some wake-up calls against Illinois and Baylor, but they had a manageable non-conference tour. It was like, the real shell shock came once SEC started, and that's so start. They don't have that luxury this year. I think that because of the non-conference schedule that they have, you've got to send the message right now that it's like, hey, it's time to get into gear. Because, I mean, once you start that schedule and you look up and down the teams they're playing, they aren't going to be able to you don't have Maryland Eastern Shore back-to-back with Pacific. I don't even remember if that was the whole, like, the order of it. But you get the gist of what I'm saying. Like, it's, I think that they do have a back-to-back that is, like, Houston and Louisville, or maybe Duke and Louisville. It's they have a crazy back-to-back in the middle of it. It's a challenging schedule. I think that Calipari is erring on the side right now of how can I send a message to these guys before the games start. So maybe a bit dramatic on the whole debacle or whatever he said, but I do see there were definite things to clean up.
Yeah, Matt and I were talking yesterday about just looking at the preseason AP Top 25 and how many teams are on there that Arkansas is going to play in non-conference and in conference as well, with how many SEC teams are in there. And it is crazy how they've set themselves up in this non-conference. And so, yeah, it makes sense to me that he would be not trying to give his team too much credit, you know, before they've played any games, right? But also that they know they're not going to be the finished product, but they need to kind of get it. They're going to have to get into shape pretty early. So to that point, did any new players stick out to you? And you know, there's a lot of key returners on this team too, but were there any surprises overall or guys that you felt like in that scrimmage really stood out to you?
Yeah, it's hard to say with this team because it's like you understand how talented they all are. So it's more just like it's your first chance to see it. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily as much of a surprise as it is just like, oh, wow, like that's the two freshmen. That's what I'll come back to. That, for me, Darius Acuff and Malik Thomas. And I keep on saying the two freshmen because they're the headliners. But Isaiah Seely, too, who's the third, he had some really good moments in the scrimmage. I know John Calipari is pretty hard on him right now about getting to just understand the flow of the game better and not to make some mistakes that you can't make. The freshmen often do. But I'll come back to those two real headliner freshmen with Acuff and Thomas. And they just move different. They're like, they're Calipari freshmen. That's the thing. Like, these are elite freshmen. Acuff is a great guard, can really distribute the ball, but he can go and get himself one too. And then Malik Thomas is a lockdown shooter, and he's kind of got that just attitude about him, I think, that is way older than being a freshman, just with kind of that grittiness to him and the motor that he has on the court. But it's like you see these recruiting strategies in college basketball. Some programs will go, you know, quantity, like throw out the net on a lot of prospects that you want, and you might catch a couple high-end ones in there, but they're not necessarily like super focused on, I want these few and these are the few I want to get. Calipari does the opposite. And if he targets you, that he wants to recruit you, he's going after you because he wants to get you. And these are two freshmen that just check all the Calipari boxes, in my opinion, as far as like they can go score, and they've just got that factor that, like, I mean, they should make it to the NBA if they live up their potential. Those are the type of players that he goes after. So those two, it was more not as a surprise to see them be good, but it was kind of a, all right, here they are type of deal.
It's your first look at them for the first, you know, you actually get to see them in something like a game situation. I think that'll be one of the biggest things we're all watching when they actually start, you know, playing some of these exhibitions and get into the season is what can these guys really do? And to your point, the Calipari freshman mold is definitely something that has worked before. And for him to have these two coming in has obviously been one of the big stories of the offseason. He brought a couple of veterans with him to SEC Media Days. So you go to Hot Springs, and then what, 2 days later, you're in Birmingham to listen to them talk a little bit and preview the season. He brought DJ Wagner and Trevin Brazil with him to be Arkansas's representatives. Obviously, they'll usually bring veteran guys to these kinds of events. But I have never actually been to an SEC basketball media days. I think I've actually only ever been to ACC media days for football. Is it much different from a football media day?
Yeah, I'd say yes, actually, in the sense that it's a smaller room, at least in the SEC sense. I don't know how all conferences work, but like it's a tiny little room, and they put these players up on tables like they do football as well. But I mean, it is like, especially with Arkansas and Calipari, when they walk through the door, it's not the same as, you know, Team X with their players. I mean, everybody is in there kind of like waiting for Calipari to come in, or like Mark Pope was in there after Calipari yesterday. He's a big one that everybody's excited, you know, to come in. So it's funny because I tell people with SEC Basketball Media Day, it's almost like the least beneficial part as an Arkansas beat reporter, as somebody who covers them, is actually Arkansas's portion there, because it's kind of designed more for the people who don't get to talk to them often. And I mean, this is why Bob Holt thrived with John Calipari in the past, because Bob didn't get to talk to John Calipari all the time. So that was his chance to ask him about Arkansas. And that's kind of the route that I think a lot of people use whenever Arkansas comes through the door. So for us, it was honestly more beneficial at times to just talk to other reporters, get a gauge of like the landscape of basketball there, of all the teams. It was good to talk to other teams' coaches, other teams' players, and really, it's just such a flurry. Arkansas's in and they're out. It was such a quick deal. It's like you see John Calipari 1 second, the next one he's on the bus headed back to the plane. But it was cool to see them there for a little bit. I was standing outside when they started to come in. And I guess Trevin Brazil, I did not cover the men's team like extensively last year. I basically did all the home games, and then once tournament rolled around, did help out with the coverage. But I guess we got the familiarity there, because I'm standing outside waiting for them to come in, and Trevin Brazil comes up and fist bumps me. I was like, I didn't know we were on fist bump
You're
level.
Friends and now, then DJ, I don't make the rules.
I'm about to say, I got a fist bump from him and DJ, so they recognized me. So I'm like, all right, that's cool to, I guess we're friends. But that was about my interaction with them. That's, I'm not even kidding. Like, that's just how in demand Arkansas is when they get through there. I mean, I stopped at both of their desks to talk for a little bit, but like, honestly, being in Fayetteville with these guys, you get better access.
It makes sense. And that's kind of always been the thing with media days. And listening to John Calipari at the podium, which, by the way, listeners, if you have not gotten a chance to hear what he's had to say at media days, it's on our Whole Hog Sports YouTube channel from the other day. You can hear all of his comments there. And what's interesting about a lot of these is the questions that they get. It's such a range. You are just popcorning. I imagine it's probably kind of hard as a coach because, you know, in a post-game situation or a game preview press conference situation, you know about what you're going to get question wise. You know, you're going to be talking about last time, you know, your last time out, your next time out. At these media days, you are getting questions from all over the place. You're getting national reporters asking you, you know, kind of state of college basketball questions. So Cal talked a little bit about transfer portal, some recruiting stuff, you know, whether he wants to retire, I guess. You know, then you're getting beat writers from other local places. Like you mentioned, Bob would always ask Cal Arkansas questions, and they've had great exchanges about that. So you'll get, you know, there were probably two or three Kentucky reporters that asked him some questions. They weren't necessarily Kentucky-focused questions or anything, but you kind of get a lot of different topics addressed in very quick succession because he only was up there for about 12, 13 minutes. So with Calipari, too, his approach to media is interesting, and I feel like sometimes you end up hearing a lot of the same things from him. So did you feel like there was anything new you learned from what Calipari had to say or from what you heard from DJ Wagner and Trevin Brazil? What were kind of your takeaways from the access that you were able to get with Arkansas's people?
No, you're right. That's the beauty of these, is that you never know when the like best quote from a coach or somebody is coming, because it's like the most random questions. Like, for example, Dawn Staley's in the middle of talking about her team yesterday, then out of left field, somebody asked about her interviewing with the Knicks and like the future of could a woman coach in the NBA. And like, it ended up being probably the most interesting like topic the whole day, as far as like women's basketball was concerned there. And then John Calipari, I mean, the same thing especially happens to him. It's the more iconic coaches like Staley or Calipari, they get these too, because everybody cares what they have to say. I found, yes, yesterday the most interesting thing was whenever Calipari honestly got asked about retirement. Mm-hmm. I thought about, and it was nothing new that we hadn't heard as far as, like, if you've been covering Arkansas, you know he puts things in terms of family, like helping how many families he's helping, mm-hmm. which, for the record, that's changed a couple times on how many families need to be helped before he's done, because at one point last year it was 20, at another point last year it was 30, yesterday it was 25 to 30, so we're in the same ballpark, but Calipari, he hasn't for sure made up his number of, like, families yet, but that aside, that was interesting to hear him get asked about, like, you know, how much longer he has, because he is one of those coaches that has lasted through a cycle where a lot of, you know, coaches who have been around decided, hey, I don't want to keep doing all this new age college basketball stuff. And they just said, this is it for me. He's one that's persevered and made it through. And he said that the reason for it is because he wants to set up, you know, his own son who's in the coaching profession. And Kelvin Sampson, they talked about it because Kelvin Sampson's son's also a coach, like, that they want to try and help get college basketball how they think it should be before they hang it up. And then he also wants to help families, which in other terms, and he's trying to help get players to the league and make life-changing money. And so that was interesting. Also, he did talk about, this was along the lines of, like, how he doesn't want to coach the moment it becomes transactional. For him, instead of transformational, of how he's helping his athletes, he did mention with the transfer portal, which I'm not sure if we'd heard this explicitly before. Maybe he's indicated it, but I don't remember him saying it explicitly, that if somebody gets in the portal, he doesn't want them back, like, go in the portal. And that's, it's funny because we've heard this on Sam Pittman before. That was kind of his approach, and that changed over time with how things changed. But Calipari is pretty dead set on, like, he didn't leave much room for it. Like, if you want to get in the portal, don't stick around, because I don't want to be transactional with you. So yeah, those were probably the most interesting things. DJ and Trevin, I'm not recalling anything out of the ordinary that was that interesting. But Calipari had, like we mentioned, he had the questions that everybody cares to know what he has to say, because it's like, it really is like you're waiting for the main course to get there. Whenever you're listening to a lot of these coaches who don't, like, their opinion just doesn't carry the same amount of weight as John Calipari's because of who he is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's always interesting to get their perspective, but it's the same, you know, the same thing we see in college football. You know, what Nick Saban says is a little bit more noteworthy than what, you know, Sam Pittman is saying, or, you know, I don't know, Shane Beamer or whatever, whoever yes. it might be. You know, there's just different levels. It doesn't mean that they don't matter, but people are there to hear from the guy, and Calipari is one of the guys here.
And for example, I think yesterday on the podcast, Matt Brown of Extra Points, he mentioned that, you know, the whole, this has gotten some steam recently, Calipari's talk about the, basically the booster insurance, mm-hmm. how that's actually just kind of already been like a thing. And it's just, it took Calipari saying it to now it's like a revolutionary thing that people are writing about. And Matt was like, actually, this has kind of already been like a thing. It's so it's just funny how that works. How some people's voices, it can drown out the others, and it makes you listen.
But before we let you go, I want to get a couple of women's basketball thoughts from you, because this was Kelsey Music's first SEC Media Days. Now that she's coaching Arkansas, you've gotten to see some practices from them. You've heard from her throughout the offseason. But did you learn anything new from her about her team this week?
Nothing necessarily new. The most interesting thing I learned about their whole program, though, was I talked to Talaya Jones there, who transferred with her from Oral Roberts, scored 18 points per game last season, so she was an elite scorer in that conference. And I just kind of assumed, like, she coming to Arkansas was probably a pretty easy decision, like, follow your coach, go up to the SEC. I talked to her a little bit about her journey and transferring, and I was like, it's always funny when you get an answer you didn't expect, and I was just like, was it a pretty easy, like, I thought I was throwing a fastball, like, or just was an easy decision to come and coach music. And she was like, no, actually, it was really kind of difficult because I got in the portal and she heard from a lot more people than I think she might have thought. So she didn't want to disclose, like, who all actually, like, was recruiting her hard. But it was interesting to me to hear her say, like, she had some pretty big offers, and it took her going on a visit to Fayetteville And she said that what she, like, kind of made her mind is she saw how happy Coach Musick was in Fayetteville and how excited she was to try and build something. And basically knowing that, like, her commitment to Arkansas could be a really big part of helping her, who's coached her in college, like, start that building. So I thought that was cool to hear. Just the honesty there about, like, hey, this wasn't, like, coming to Arkansas wasn't necessarily just set in stone because Kelsey was my coach. And so that was interesting. As far as Musick's address herself, I don't think there was anything I haven't heard before. It was more just for her, interesting to see her navigate her first big-time media day because, like, she obviously coming from D2 and then to Oral Roberts, like, there's nothing that can prepare you for getting thrown from station to station at the SEC media days where you're bumping shoulders with Dawn Staley and bumping shoulders with Vic Schaefer and you're, like, the new kid on the block and somebody felt like, but she did a good job, I thought, of like instilling some just kind of confidence about, like, not necessarily her this year team. She just kept on coming back to, like, this team, like, it'll take time to build what she wants. But I think she instilled confidence with her demeanor about, like, what she wants to accomplish in Arkansas. It wasn't like, you know, a lot of times you'll go to these media days and hear a coach, like, really hype up their current team and, like, everybody's team is so good. Like, I mean, I was at SEC football media days and Mark Stoops could have had you believe that Kentucky had the best football team in the world. Like, that's just how all coaches talk. And I don't think that she really did that a lot this year. And it's not that she doesn't like her team. I just think she really wanted to focus more on, like, I'm building something and, like, this is something that's going to take some time. And I'm a coach that wants to come in and win. I think that was, like, the main thing is she set, like, the tone of her own demeanor and, like, just the, she wasn't there for, like, just to have fun. That's not the vibe I got. It wasn't like, I'm soaking it all in. I'm having a good time. My first media day. It was more like, hey, I'm coming in here and I'm letting you know, like, I'm going to build something and I want to win. So I thought that was interesting.
We are going to hear from Kelsey Musick at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club tomorrow, which will be our podcast tomorrow. You'll get to hear Ethan do a Q&A with Coach Musick about her new team and learn a little bit more about them. But Ethan, we really appreciate you joining us. Get back on the road and get home safe. And we will see you tomorrow when you get to talk to Coach Musick for our whole audience.
Yeah, I got to get back to Fayetteville in time for the radio show at the Catfish Bowl tonight.
So. Oh, of course.
How could I miss it? So. Thanks, Christina.
Thanks for joining us, and we hope to see you on our website at wholehogsports.com and back on our podcast tomorrow for that Q&A with Coach Kelsey Musick.